Lord Kitchener, reluctant to send troops to the Middle East, finally agrees to support Churchill's plan for an invasion by land to capture Istanbul. On April 22, 1915, a British army made up mostly of Australian and New Zealand troops, along with some French forces, crams into Royal Navy ships for the journey to Gallipoli, a narrow peninsula of land on the western side of the Dardanelles Straits.
For 3 days and three nights, four men lived where one would have been trapped in that iron-cased, floating stinkhole, eating badly cooked food and drinking warm water. By the night of the third day, as we neared Gallipoli, we were in the mood for anything. We'd fight anybody for anything, we didn't care what.
General Ian Hamilton, commanding the Mediterranean Expeditionary Force, intends to land his troops and drive up the Gallipoli Peninsula to attack and capture Istanbul. In London, the government anticipates news of a great victory in a few days. On April 25th, 1915, nearly 80,000 British troops come ashore at Anzac Cove and Cape Helles, while French troops land at Coombe Calais on the eastern side of the Dardanelles. Despite all their preparations, the Turkish forces, numbering about 60,000, are taken by surprise. General von Sanders cannot be certain exactly where the enemy will land. Now the battle becomes a critical game of time. How long will it take for the British to gain the high ground that overlooks the beaches? How long will it take for Turkish reinforcements to arrive at those heights and drive the enemy back? The Australian New Zealand troops, called Anzacs, actually land 1 mile north of their intended beach. Instead of the gently sloping plain they expected, they face steep slopes. Beyond lies a rugged landscape of hills and ravines that divide the shoreline into small, unconnected beaches. The Anzacs rush forward, reaching the heights of the Sari Bear Ridge. On that same ridge stands Colonel Mustafa Kemal and Turkish troops from his 19th Division. Although he has received no orders from headquarters, he knows that something decisive must be done immediately. The Turks are retreating. They've run out of ammunition. Colonel Kemal orders them to stop, fix their bayonets, and lie on the ground. The Anzac troops react and also fling themselves to the ground. Kemal's reinforcements arrive and drive the British off the ridge. At Cape Helles Beach, the British land in broad daylight and are cut down by devastating fire from the enemy. Two battalions emerge from the transport ship River Clyde. Many soldiers are killed before they reach the shore. An Allied pilot flying overhead reports that the water is red with blood for 50 yards from the shoreline. As darkness falls at Gallipoli, not a single Allied objective set for that day has been reached. The critical high ground overlooking the beach is still in Turkish hands. The Anzacs hold on to their strips of beach for 3 weeks. Then the Turks counterattack in a desperate attempt to drive their foe back into the sea. But they fail. And so the battle goes on, capturing a hill or a ridge at great sacrifice, only to be driven out again. On August 6th, the British stage a second landing at Suvla Bay, just north of Anzac Cove, in an attempt to outflank the Turkish positions. Although the landing comes off very quickly with little resistance, the troops fail to seize the high ground along the ridgelines. A few days later, the Turks counterattack at Suvla Bay, led by the British nemesis, Colonel Mustafa Kemal. He leads one of the attacks himself, and the British cannot hold on. They are driven back to within a half mile of the sea. Once again, the Turks have taken the high ground. The Allies have failed to advance against an enemy who is supposed to be inferior to Western armies.
The Turkish soldier is excellent fighting material, well looked after, sufficiently nourished. Properly trained and calmly led, these men will accomplish the highest aims.
Bravery itself does not win wars. And the Turks, the Ottoman soldiers, were certainly no braver than, say, the English or the French. So how is it that they actually won battles? And the answer is that they had a very, very proficient army that was trained to a high level of proficiency, although the Allies never really caught on to this. It was an army that was modeled on the German army, and although they weren't nearly anywhere near as good as the Germans, simply modeling their army on a successful army carried them a long way.
As summer turns into fall, the bloody stalemate goes on at Gallipoli. The depressing monotony is broken by sporadic attacks, but nothing changes much. The Turks still hold all the key terrain. The British are still pinned with their backs to the sea. Disease becomes the great killer in the trenches. Dysentery, cholera, and typhus.
There was not much sudden death, but there was slow death everywhere. The body was slowly dying from the inside. We talked to each other, we laughed occasionally, but always the thought of death in our minds. The men contracted dysentery and fever every day. The bullets did not take a big toll. It was the death of germs.
In October, London wants General Hamilton's opinion on the feasibility of evacuating all his troops. He replies that half his men will die trying to leave the beaches. A few days later, Hamilton is replaced by General Charles Munro. He surveys the hopeless situation at Cape Helles, Anzac Cove, and Suvla Bay, and tells the War Office that the army needs to leave Gallipoli with no more delay. Hearing about Munro's estimate, Winston Churchill bitterly comments, "He came, he saw, he capitulated." Lord Kitchener visits Gallipoli himself in November. After seeing the quagmire with his own eyes, he orders General Munro to prepare for evacuation. On December 18, 1915, British forces begin to re-embark on their ships. By January 9th, the withdrawal from Gallipoli is complete. Not a single Allied soldier has been killed during the entire evacuation.
Got the news of the evacuation of Anzac. The more I think of it, the more horrible the whole show seems. All that sacrifice, all that labour. For nothing at all. The flower of Australian manhood lies on and below the earth.
The cost of the campaign is horrifying. A combined total of 1 million men have fought at Gallipoli. Nearly half of them become casualties. Never again will the British Army attack the Turks from the sea. So ends Winston Churchill's gamble to win a quick victory against the Ottoman Empire. He is removed from his post as First Sea Lord and demoted to Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, a small, insignificant job where he will no longer control the fate of so many lives.